I'm Bill Zortman, and welcome to It's Your Agribusiness. It's show 617 in our It's Your Business original series. Rev, thanks for the symbols. In just a moment, a visit with Tom Vilsack, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture, answers to questions on ethanol here and abroad, the next generation of farmers, what consumers should know. Our show looks as well at the next generation and what they should know in agriculture, including those 1,500 or so that will be at the Ag Day at the Pavilion. And we'll be talking as well with the head of 4-H in South Dakota before he makes another trip selling South Dakota. Land development, an issue as well in this hour. We'll include the Ag Department's development director, along with a Lincoln County commissioner who knows that partnerships can produce hundreds of head of cattle in this very year in Lincoln County. Plus, we're going to be visiting as well about Feeding South Dakota, concert scheduled for March 25th. But first, the interview we taped with U.S. Secretary Vilsack. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, good morning. Thanks for joining It's Your Agribusiness.
It's great to be with you.
Now, one of the things that I noticed in going back to some of your talks around the country since the Farm Bill passed, and that must make a difference to you too, right?
Well, it certainly does. One of the key issues for us was to have certainty about farm policy and how we might be able to provide assistance and help, particularly to livestock producers who had been devastated the last couple of years. Really happy that we've restored those disaster programs, and we're looking forward to getting folks an opportunity to sign up as early as April 15th.
Secretary, one of the things we like to do in our show is to talk a little bit about the farmers and the fact that our consumers listening don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from. Just 10 to 15% of their paycheck for food is far better than it is around the world, or far better than you gardening for the rest of the world.
Well, it is a bargain for us. Americans often take for granted the great diversity of what we have in our grocery stores, over 300,000 products, and all of them start with a farmer or rancher somewhere and a producer somewhere in the United States. 85% of what we consume in this country is grown in this country, and we are definitely a food-secure nation. And as you say, when we leave the grocery store, we've got more of our paycheck as a percentage than anybody else in the world. So it's a great bargain. But the other thing that's interesting to me is that the rest of us have the opportunity to pursue other lines of work because we've delegated the responsibility of producing the food for our families to a small number of Americans, less than 1% of our population farms. That gives the other 99% the ability to do whatever they choose to do, and that's a great freedom, and which, again, we often take for granted and don't give farmers and ranchers and producers enough credit for.
In essence, what you're saying is that the American economy is rebounding, and we're in a situation right now when you do have a strong ag economy that it's good for the rest of all of us.
Right. 1 out of 12 jobs in America tied to agriculture and food processing. 14% of all manufacturing tied specifically and directly to agriculture. 5% of our GDP, agriculture and food processing. So it is a significant part of our economy, over $730 billion. When you take into consideration everything, and also export opportunities supporting nearly a million jobs with an agricultural export record last year set, creating a surplus. We actually sell more to the world than we buy from the rest of the world. That's not true in a lot of other aspects of our economy. So there is no question that agriculture is key and important to the economic health of the country, in addition to all the other benefits we get from it.
The speech you gave down in San Antonio, and we had the head of the corn producers and the soybean growers in South Dakota talk to us a little bit after that. They came back and mentioned that biofuels was one of the things that you touched on, which is something that our Governor Dugard and the Iowa Governor Branstad have said that we really need to get serious about.
We do, and I think in terms of USDA, our responsibility is to try to expand market opportunities, both domestically and internationally. We announced for the first time we're going to include ethanol and biofuel promotion in our trade efforts. They, too, were restored by the passage of the Farm Bill, so we're happy to get that opportunity to stay in business promoting agricultural exports around the world. We're going to have a trade mission to China this spring, and we're going to include folks from the ethanol industry in that trade mission for the first time. We're also going to target Japan and India and China as potential market opportunities for ethanol expansion. At home, our strategy is to continue to work with petroleum marketers to try to see if we can figure out a way to continue to provide higher blends of biofuel. We know there are a lot of vehicles out there that could use E85, but the reality is they can't get E85 because there aren't the distribution or pumping systems in our gas stations to allow it. So we need to figure out ways to provide credit and financial capital to folks who are interested in putting an E85 pump in their convenience store or in their gas station.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, you know, we've also seen an increase of the number in farmers that are under the age of 35, and that's something that's been a theme, the next generation of farmers and how we make sure they stay on the farm.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons why I was excited about the passage of this farm bill, because it did contain a recognition that we have an aging farming population. We're beginning to see signs that young people are coming back to or considering agriculture as a calling. But we have to recognize the constraints and difficulties of that happening. And part of what the Farm Bill will do is it will allow us to continue our credit programs, and particularly our microloan program that's been quite successful. It will also provide some incentives in terms of interest and terms for beginning farmers. We've expanded the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program with our land-grant universities, additional resources put in that program. We're altering the way in which crop insurance premiums will be assessed in terms of less mature farming operations, giving them a break on the premium. So there are a variety of ways in which we're trying to help these beginning farmers and ranchers. You know, one of the issues that doesn't get a lot of attention that isn't part of the Farm Bill, but as the Congress begins to look at tax reform and tax policy, you know, there's an issue often in the countryside about estate taxes, but really I think the real concern is income tax. A lot of folks now hold land that's appreciated in value significantly, and they know if they hold on it until death, they get a stepped-up value. They don't have to, their heirs don't have to pay income tax if they sell it. But if the farm owner sells it during their lifetime, they're hit with a fairly significant income tax bill. So maybe what Congress ought to be looking at now is a way in which we can incent folks to who own land, who don't have a family member who is likely to farm the land, to sell it to a beginning farmer, a returning veteran, and in doing so get some kind of tax preference or tax break.
I know you spent some time in California where they had droughts. Maybe that trip to California or two that you've made has brought some moisture out there. But about the same time, we had some people from the Midwest that were all trying to encourage some of those people who felt they weren't welcomed with their dairy herds in California to bring those herds to South Dakota, where you've got a tax advantage, or Iowa or Nebraska. But it seems that there are some people in the Midwest that would like to be able to help those that don't feel welcome in states that aren't agricultural-based.
Well, I mean, the key here is we want to maintain the great diversity of American agriculture, and we want to maintain the opportunity for people to stay in and be attracted to this business. You know, our challenge at USDA is to use this newly enacted Farm Bill to preserve the profitability of large-scale agriculture, because that's obviously critically important. To help, I think, maintain and then ultimately expand mid-sized operations that are having a harder time in all parts of the country, and then assist those beginning operators to get started. I'm deeply concerned about the middle-sized operations, the middle-income operations, because it is harder and harder for them to compete in traditional markets. Those markets pay a premium for quality and quantity, and sometimes those mid-sized operators don't have the capacity to spread the cost of production over so many acres, and so they're put at a competitive disadvantage. So one of the reasons we're excited about the Farm Bill is it does give us the ability to better support local and regional food systems. In other words, give those mid-sized and smaller operators an opportunity to directly do business with their consumer, with their customer, as opposed to doing it through a third party. That gives them the opportunity to negotiate a price. It gives them an opportunity to have less transportation expense, things of that nature, and they don't have to pay a middleman to essentially market their product. So this Farm Bill gives us a multitude of options in terms of sizes of operations and types of production processes in the country.
Ranchers Relief Fund in South Dakota has reached almost $5 million, and they had help from heifers that were sent in from other parts of the country. And I know in talking with our Secretary of Agriculture here, Lucas Lynch, the fact that some of those things that were said by your staff, by you, at some of these meetings, very encouraging to those people trying to recover.
Well, you know, it's really a sad sad casualty of not getting a farm bill done in a timely way is that we probably lost some of these producers who suffered through a drought in 2012 or who lost their herd in 2013 because of a snowstorm that nobody could have predicted. We're going to try to get these disaster programs up and going as quickly as we possibly can. Normally it takes 6 to 8 months to get something revved up, but the president has directed me to do it in 60 days, and we're going to get it done in 60 days. Folks will be able to apply sometime around April 15th for disaster assistance, and then those resources will be made available to them shortly thereafter. So hopefully we'll stem that loss of producers and give those people an added boost. I know that Representative Noem has been particularly focused on this and appreciate her advocacy for getting it done. And I know senators and representatives from the Midwestern states in particular that were impacted were deeply concerned about this.
One of the things that I want to close with deals with keeping young people inspired to be involved in agriculture, what we can do, what we can say to help.
Well, you know, if you're talking to a young person, you know, I think there are many ways in which you can convince them that this is a great life. Oftentimes we talk about how hard the work is and the tax systems and the regulations and so forth, and that's all true. But if you're really going to talk to a young person about this, it seems to me that you can say to them, look, if you are interested in being part of the solution to mankind's most difficult and pressing problem in the 21st century, which is how to feed an ever-increasing world population with more intense weather patterns, with less water, with less arable land because of expanding cities, then you need to be in the farming business. You need to be in agriculture to help us solve that problem. If you're a young person who's deeply concerned about the environment, deeply concerned about the climate, want to do something to reverse that situation so that folks can continue to farm and continue to ranch into the future, most of what's going to occur in terms of mitigating the impact of carbon and so forth is going to occur in rural areas. It's going to occur on farms and forest lands that are managed and owned by regular folks. You can be part of that. You can help mitigate the consequences and adapt to the consequences of a changing climate. If you're a young person who wants to do something different, wants to sort of redesign and re-engineer the American economy so that it's less focused on and dependent upon oil, and having a more balanced and diversified option, oil obviously important, but balancing it with bio-based opportunities, then agriculture is your calling. And finally, if you're a person who wants to be an entrepreneur, wants to be in charge of your own life and be a small business owner, that's basically what a farming operation is. And especially the local and regional food systems that are cropping up, that's a real opportunity for innovation and entrepreneurship. So I think there is a proactive, positive message to make directly to young people. And then I think agriculture generally has to remind the rest of America of its importance, and not only in terms of the food security we enjoy and the affordability of our food, but also the fact that every single one of us that's not farming has delegated that responsibility of feeding our family to someone else. And thank God we've got great people doing that.
Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, appreciate you visiting with us on It's Your Business.
You bet. Take care.
Well, we appreciate the Secretary's chance to visit with us. We did that Thursday afternoon. He was out and about doing some other things today. But it kind of touches on our next topic, and that's the value of talking to consumers and those in the next generation. And we have Kaya Mogan and Michelle Wellman, and they're hosting an Ag Day at the Pavilion, 10 to 2. And 1,500 or so you're expecting?
Or so.
You like that?
I love it, yeah. We could be anywhere as high as about 1,800. So
the Pavilion can't hold much more than that in our lobby, really, so it's
it really can't.
Well.
One of the things the Secretary did tell us in that interview is that we need to make sure that the next generation understands that the farm is not like in Boston.
Yeah, I'm a city girl. So this Ag Day is really was fascinating for me. I started at the Pavilion 6 years ago, and this is one of my favorite events because there's live animals, and I don't always get to pet a live animal except for my four dogs. So I always love what the Pavilion brings.
All right, now it's free. Lunch is free.
Yep.
Eating dirt. You got to tell me about that, though. I looked at that, and you said, oh, they'll love it.
Yeah, there's a group from SDSU, the Plant Science and Precision Ag Group. They bring pudding and Oreos and gummy worms, and let's just say the kids really like that.
And so do some of the moms.
I'm not surprised.
Yep.
You're going to learn where your food comes from, make your own pasta, crawl through a worm tunnel.
Yes.
You don't get to do that every day, do you?
No.
No. Yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of these kids, you know, you brought up the point that this is the 11th year, and a lot of the kids that were starting these now might be bringing their kids, depending on the age that they were when they first came. And that's kind of fun. It's all generational.
I'm amazed, too. You've got 48 vendors or so that are working with this. They want to work with it.
Yep.
Because they kind of understand the importance of spreading the word.
Absolutely. They believe in what they do, and they care about it, and their passion totally comes through the day of. They're there for 4 hours, but it's a full day, and kids are, I mean, it's a constant flow of people coming up to the booth and making their activities and just getting other kids excited about agriculture.
You're going to create dirt critters, play with farm charms. Those just some of the goals, and you're probably going to be taught new things if there are kids involved.
Absolutely. Parents learn, too, though. It's for everybody. It's for all ages.
And you guys have been doing this a number of years. What's the most amazing reactions you get?
The bright eyes. Just bright eyes, big, huge smiles. Remember when we were doing the milking? Is the milking coming back this year?
Not this year.
This year. Oh, Lord. Yeah. Milking is not as easy as you think it is. Milking a cow, not so easy.
Well, it is if you grew up in Iowa.
Exactly.
If you grew up in Boston, you got it out of the carton. You didn't care.
That is true. You'd go to the convenience store on the corner. That's true.
You know, 11 years this is going on. So if somebody was actually 5, 6, or 7, they're now an adult. Do you think that maybe they will bring their kids in future years?
Oh, I have no doubt. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt at all. And that's, the Pavilion is like that. I mean, we have kids that are in preschool, and those kids, they're coming back, and they're, you know, now they're in the high school programs, and they're going to bring their kids back for theater later on.
And it's Saturday, 10 to 2, Washington Pavilion, 11th Annual Ag Day. If people have questions, numbers they can call, website they can visit.
WashingtonPavilion.org. Pavilion has one L. 367-6000 is the ticket hotline. And I want to make sure that everyone knows the Science Center is free. And so when you're done with Ag Day, go ahead and head out in our Science Center for the rest of the day.
Kaya and Michelle from the Pavilion. We'll talk more Friday to give you another push.
I'd love it.
It's an important thing.
Thank you.
We appreciate
Thank you so much.
You're saying. Peter Nielsen heads up the 4-H work for SDSU. We wanted to get Peter to weigh in this morning as well. Things that we're talking next generation about agriculture. Peter, how are you?
Well, good, Bill. How are you doing today?
We have talked with the Secretary of Agriculture this morning, who talked about the importance of passing it on to the next generation. We just talked about the big event at the Pavilion on Saturday. So how do we get kids involved with 4-H and let them have another horizon?
Well, I think the beauty of 4-H and agriculture progress in South Dakota is you've got to understand, you know, we're preparing that next generation, true enough, but we cannot take for granted that food production and food supplies and the understanding and awareness of what it entails is limited to outside of our state. We've got to understand that South Dakota, though we are an extremely rural community, though we are obviously very engaged in agriculture, we still have a new generation coming up, but we've got to make sure they understand where their food comes from. And that's where I think that 4-H program and other varying organizations that revolve around the agriculture and youth project areas are very vital as we go forward in the future, Bill.
Well, and 4-H has been very, very proactive, much like social media is kind of taking charge of a lot of things we do in our lives. You don't have to be into milking cows or harvesting corn, whatever. You've got other projects now for 4-H to get them interested.
Well, Well, you know, that's interesting you say that. One of the projects that we have going on currently is an individual has come forward and is talking to us about outdoor education, not just from the straight agriculture standpoint, but to understand what else about agriculture and conservation is going on for kids that don't have that exposure. And they'd like to partner and work on some things. I hope to be able to talk to you about it someday. But right now, talking about just how important it is for our next generation to understand what the outdoors is like and how that involves agriculture and making sure we have stewards of conservation as we grow up going into the future.
Peter Nielsen, he's getting ready to head out of South Dakota. We appreciate you taking time. We'll talk really soon, Peter.
Bill, I appreciate it. Thank you.
You bet. Rick Shields is our Midwest Communication Farm Director. We've talked a lot about the kids, the next generation, included the Secretary of Agriculture as well. What's new from your end, Rick?
Well, several things. So listening to the Secretary here, for one on ethanol, you know, talking about increased emphasis on marketing it both here and overseas, and inclusion of ethanol's message in this spring's trade mission to China, one thing. And also targeting not only that country, but Japan and India as potential growth markets for U.S.-produced ethanol. It's coming, of course, as U.S.-produced ethanol is up against some competition. Places like Brazil has been for some time down there for the biofuel dollar. And on the topic of second-generation farming, something integral to the just-passed Farm Bill, recognition of the aging farm population average age, I think, crept up another year there in the latest census of ag numbers that were pre-released earlier in the month. A lot of Farm Bill programs to help producers enter or stay in agriculture. You mentioned things like microloans to continue and a focus on, it's kind of interesting too, I thought, Bill, income tax as opposed to estate tax. Kind of a shift in emphasis there, allowing sale of farmland during a farmer's lifetime to a young farmer without encouraging a huge income tax hit. Had a program or story on that last spring, in fact, for South Dakota. Also, better support for local and regional food systems. And I like the advice there at the end to the young people considering going into farming, your opportunity to be part of a solution to a lot of really big, important problems facing the world.
Breaking news.
Well, there is approval now to that Fuels Act, the acronym meaning Farmers Undertake Environmental Land Stewardship Act, okay, Fuels. That would ease the spill prevention control and countermeasure regs passed by EPA on farm storage tanks. And it would also up the limit for these regulations to 10,000 gallons from the, 1,320 or something right now. And, of course, it's going to have to pass the Senate in order to change there. And so far, well, it hasn't.
Rick Shields, our Midwest Communication Farm Director, appreciate you picking up on all that's been talked this morning. Good communication, and it's always good from you, too, Rick.
Well, thank you, sir.
We'll talk to you next Monday.
Have a good one.
When we come back, we got lots more to talk about, lots of events happening here, all a part of your Agribusiness Hour. Welcome back to It's Your Agribusiness. Travis and Roger Stark, Holt McDowell, iGrow.org sponsors join us. The Batmobile is running
here
down the road. Has it got ethanol in it?
Always.
Always has ethanol.
E85, yeah. Typically.
Yeah.
You know, we've touched on some things this morning. Next generation of kids involved. The day at the pavilion. We've talked about the 4-H side of it. When you start hearing that, it means that you guys might be needed for a while.
Gotta hope so. You know, that's what we want.
Well, and you see that carrying on down in Nebraska. The University of Nebraska at Lincoln just presented a program for cooperatives and the future in agriculture. So they have a 3-credit class down there. They haven't asked us to teach it yet, but we got our name on the list, so we'll see what happens.
You know, as we've talked about Hualt University.
Yes.
It made me wonder if you did this with some other things as well at Holt. And I learned last week that you guys have several different branches that have Hualt University. You guys aren't exclusive.
Oh, heavens no. We do stuff for healthcare. We do items for the medical field. on liability. We do contractor.
Construction and manufacturing.
Nonprofits is a huge item that we do. There's a lot of 501(c)(3)s in and around the area that we do. And, yeah, I mean, we're kind of all things to all people. We're a little bit like Kello.
There you go. I like that. You're both AM, FM, and have streaming.
And satellite radio all wrapped into one.
I like that. You guys are constantly on the road. What are the farmers telling you? Outside.
How are we going to get rid of this corn? I mean, it appears there's a pent-up issue with corn because of transportation and the railroad and oil and every other thing, and it appears that they can't get stuff moved. And I think there's a lot still in farm storage that's wet and needs to probably be dried. Elevators are having a problem. I mean, we're hearing everything. Price of corn, price of... I think it's getting... pretty jumbled together now because it's getting close to the time of the year when nobody's worried about hauling corn to town. They're going to be planting it pretty quick. So there's a lot of jumbled stuff, but this whole deal about corn delivery and selling and getting it to, the rivers froze and...
Well, and another aspect of that, you talk about increased food costs, and you're going to see that with transportation costs skyrocketing. A lot of these co-ops can't afford to ship by rail anymore because the oil companies, and especially out in North Dakota, have basically run the gamut in getting all of those cars that they need all the time. And one of the biggest things that we see is you only have so many conductors out there or engineers that can run these trains. So they are maxing out on hours. So you might see a train sitting for 2 or 3 days alongside of the road just waiting for somebody that has hours to come and drive.
And why wouldn't we expand ethanol instead of restrict it like the EPA wants to do? I mean, you have corn here, you have close by. Why wouldn't you want to produce more with the product? And I think later on you're going to talk about a dairy that's coming to the area. And why wouldn't we want to stick this corn down throats of cows that are within 150 miles of where we produce it? Why do we have to put so many wheels under this product to get it somewhere to drive the cost up? Why not put the cows here, put the ethanol plants? You know, if Kellogg's wants to put a Post-Osties plant in Watertown, we should have it. And we should do it here and right here in the breadbasket, Minnesota, Iowa, South Dakota, and North Dakota.
I was surprised to hear Vilsack with the text of his speech, and I got a lot of the things that I talked to him about with the commodity growers down in San Antonio, the biggest one that they have nationwide. And that's where he kind of launched this campaign, ethanol here and abroad, which is far different than what we've been hearing, what our ethanol people have been telling us, Matt the Poet and Joni from the bio side of it as well, that we need to get past those restrictions and make sure that we are growing the corn from post to post and making sure that we can use it. We got corn, why not use it?
Absolutely. I'd like to see Poet have to put two more stories on that building out there because of they had to put so many support people in because their operation got so big. That would be the most perfect thing we could see. And I'd love to see the facilities around here.
And I think a big part of that is just getting to understand because the oil companies, again, are using the tactic of the blend wall and fearing people right. that, we can't blend any more ethanol into our supplies. That's not the case. That truly is not the case. The public needs to understand this, and we need to get behind the idea of higher blend ethanols because it's going to be cheaper for us.
I've had two vehicles that I've put over 700,000 miles on in less than 10 years that I burned nothing in it but ethanol, and I have done nothing to those vehicles at all other than change oil, put tires and wear holes in the seats because we're going up and down the road. So, I mean, I don't know how many real things you have to do to tell you this works, but.
Yeah, I would love to see somebody come out and show us an instance where ethanol has damaged a vehicle in the way that the oil companies are saying it will damage your vehicle. It's just, we've never seen it.
And, you have to dance so hard with these people, but sometimes it's kind of like that old deal when that mule went up and was going to go over the cliff, and the guy's standing there, and his friend come over, and he took a two before and hit him right between. He said, you got to get their attention, and sometimes, trying to get that mule to back up and wham, let him have it, and that's kind of what we need to do with the oil companies is somebody needs the two before him between the eyes and say, back up.
Now, I understand these guys are going to provide the two before if you need it.
Yes.
So how do they reach you at Holt McDowell?
Give us a call, 605-339-3874 or holtmcdowell.com. Probably the easiest way to get in touch with us.
And I know you had the ladies in here talking about the Ag Day.
Yes.
Every day is Ag Day for us in South Dakota. Every day is an Ag Day. When the business that means that much to this state, so we appreciate them every day. So every day you eat, every day you burn, that's our Ag Day.
There goes the Batmobile with the Starks. They're on the road.
Dude, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Talk to you soon.
Bye now.
Rocky Bohr, Plains Commerce Bank, Vice President of Ag for this set of banks across South Dakota. Rocky, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bill.
Well, we've talked a lot this morning about crops, the ethanol, talked with the Secretary of Agriculture. What's on your plate at Plains Commerce?
Well, we're still busy in that renewal season, but, boy, you do hear a lot of discussion about ethanol. Most of the chatter on the Internet is all reference to ethanol, especially in the area of the grains themselves. Ethanols have been a big user of corn. They've done more than their share, helping us chew up some of this surplus of corn that we set out there on. But right now, they're running into their own problems just trying to get the end product moved. So, and you've already touched on that, I've heard. So trains are hard to find.
They are indeed. The farm values is pretty important. What are you telling those people coming into your banks?
Well, right now, I tell you the most effective thing they can do this year is again, manage costs, but also take advantage of those rallies in the market. Market some crop. Keep moving that price, that average price up for themselves. And that they just got to watch, take advantage of those opportunities as they pop up for them.
Plains Commerce, for people that don't know, tell them about that.
Sure. Plains Commerce, we're located in the communities of Hoban, Aberdeen, Condi, Watertown, Sioux Falls, and then our loan production office sitting in Mitchell.
Rocky Bohr, Plains Commerce Bank. We appreciate all that you guys do and know that we all are reading from the same hymnal this morning on the importance of agriculture.
Yes, it is. It's every day. I think that was so correct. Every day is about ag.
Okay. What a family we have. Rocky, thank you for your time.
You bet. You take care, Bill. Have a good week.
You bet. When we come back, we're going to talk about a dairy for Lincoln County, all a part of It's Your Agribusiness. Projects find good locations. Lincoln County, the first in the state to go through the Rural Development Site Analysis. Paul Kosboth is the director of the Division of Agricultural Development. He's joined us again today. Last time we talked, Paul, was last fall.
Well, we feel we've come a long way since then.
All right. We've had Lincoln County Commissioner Jim Schmidt join us. Jim,
hi, Paul.
Good morning to you.
Good morning, Paul.
Good morning. Good morning, Jim.
All right, Paul, if you will, this project that's set up, it's got to have approval before it moves anyplace. And after we've talked about the approval, we want to talk about a success that we're going to have with some dairy that's going to be big for South Lincoln County.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, Bill, the first step that we take with this program is meeting with the local commission, the local leaders, and finding out if they're even interested in us coming in and doing this. And as you mentioned, Lincoln County was one of the first counties to want to look at it and have an opportunity to be part of it right away.
Jim, when I took a look at the story that our good friend Jody Schwann did last week talking about this and the cattle, you and I were talking about other business on the phone, and all of a sudden you said, you know, this is a lot of cattle. Tell us how big this is.
It's going to be a 4,200-head dairy that'll be located in the southwest portion of the county. And I think when you you start looking at the amount of economic activity that 4,200-head generate, it really translates into a lot of dollars for a lot of things. For not only for a tax base for schools, not only for a tax base for the county, but also for surrounding communities that will benefit from extra activity on Main Street.
Lincoln County is known for being the fastest growing county in South Dakota, known other parts of the world as very fast growing. How can you mix dairy and people with that kind of growth?
Well, actually, it getting to be a challenge, but Lincoln County is both benefit, you know, from a rural ag mix and also some challenges. But I think one of the things that our commission has done is to recognize that we can use both to everybody's advantage. We can use the urban section to provide them with the services they want. The taxes that they generate translates in to keep our good infrastructure, our roads in place, and we make sure that all of our zoning laws and things like that safeguard that agricultural base so it doesn't get encroached on by commercial development and other things that would preclude us from having this kind of dairy being put in.
Paul, when you hear this success story, what's it make you want to do with the rest of the state?
You know, we want to keep going, Bill. This is all about good planning in finding out in the areas not just where a project might work, but where it's welcome. And that direction is always going to come from the local leadership. And that, again, goes back to why we start this conversation with the commissions right from the outset.
Last time you and I were going to do something, you were over in McCook County, if I remember right.
Yes.
So what reactions have you heard just a little further out that are not on the 29 belt going south?
You know, we've had great reception really anywhere that we've talked with the commissions. We now have 26 counties that have signed up and said, hey, we'd like to be part of this. We recognize it as a tool that's being offered. And so really, primarily the focus has been on the eastern part of the state thus far. And that's just kind of where the word of mouth has been spreading and where the counties, in most cases, have actually contacted us before we've even had the chance to reach out to them to explain this to them. So those 26 counties, I think I mentioned before, we now have a plan in place to try to have 15 total done by July 1st of this year. And then we hope to be able to get some more funding to keep this going for all the remaining counties moving forward.
Jim, what else is working in Lincoln County?
Well, Lincoln County is blessed with a lot of things, with growth in the north, but in our ag sector remains strong. We have, for our grain moving facilities, we have plenty of export demand for the corn that is located coming into Canton from Harvest States, and we have also a cooperative that came from over in Iowa that also gives another marketing opportunity. Bill, I'd just like to say one thing. I'd like to commend not only the governor, but Paul and Lucas for their leadership in making this program a reality, because I think this is an example of how state government can really assist local government in economic opportunity.
Paul Kospos, the director of the Division of Agricultural Development, Jim Schmidt, county commissioner down in Lincoln County. We got to move on to a couple of more events that are coming this week. Gentlemen, I'm sorry we lost a little time to the Secretary of Agriculture. Forgive us today.
Bill, thanks for the opportunity.
We'll be looking forward to doing it again. Thank you, gentlemen.
Okay, thank you. Leanne Phillips, Midwest Dairy Association. There's a concert coming to Sioux Falls on March 25th, and we've been just talking about dairy here in South Dakota, talking a few other things. Leanne, fill us in as to what's going on.
Absolutely. On March 25th, a part of the Central Plains Dairy Expo event, Dairy Farm families are opening up the concert and inviting the public to come and be our guest to enjoy the Roots and Boots tour featuring Joe Diffie, Sammy Kershaw, and Aaron Tippin. We're just asking for a $10 donation to Feeding South Dakota, and you can come in and join the concert.
And again, at First Bank and Trust, Hy-Vee, Lewis Drug, all providing that. And, you know, it's all about agriculture, much like we've done in our show today, Leanne. We've talked a lot of ag with a lot of people that understand the importance of it, from the tykes all the way up to those crusty old people that live in Lincoln County that farm acres in near Lenox. But it is important that people understand, and that's what you're doing with this concert.
Absolutely. So in addition to enjoying the concert, we'll also take some time at the beginning of the show to share information with the public about dairy farming and the impact of dairy farming on not only a healthy diet, but also local economies and the things that farmers are doing to be sustainable on their operations. And you've also talked about the next generation. We'll be showing a video featuring an area dairy farm family that has worked to transition their farm to the next generation as well.
Leanne, we're going to talk with you again next week. I think we got the word out. We appreciate what you're doing, and I think you can see what we're trying to do with dairy and ag across the state.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You bet. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We got another guest and need to get some business done as we close out It's Your Agribusiness on this Monday. Need to mention one more event that's coming up the 18th and 19th here in Sioux Falls. The SDSU Extension Precision Farm Specialist are having the Western Corn Belt Precision Ag Conference. If you need more information on that, go to igrow.org. We had Dr. Greg Carlson on last week, and there's plenty of information there. Hope you will take time to attend. Todd Neuberger, Edward Jones, the Main Street to Wall Street Report. Anything green on the market today?
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Busy, my friend.
Yeah, I hear you. Happy St. Paddy's Day, everyone. Todd Neuberger of Edward Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. Stocks are rising, rebounding from a drop-off last week after Sunday's referendum over whether Crimea will join Russia pass without violence. And domestic news, and this is really the moving factor. In domestic news, factory production in the U.S. rose in February by the most in the last 6 months, indicating that the industry may be starting to recover from the severe winter weather. So far this morning in the S&P 500, best performing sector is technology, worst performing sector utilities. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 155 points at 16,200. The S&P 500 index is up 15 points at 1,856. And the NASDAQ is up 43 points at 4,288. Volume on the New York Exchange has traded about 150 million shares. Advancers are outnumbering decliners by a 4-to-1 margin. Commodity markets, gold is down $5 at $1,378. Silver down 9 cents at $21.36, and crude oil prices are off 51 cents at $98.38. In some stocks of local interest, Daktronics is trading at $13.89. Citigroup is at $47.62. Raven up 95 cents at $33.39. Summit Hotel Properties trading at $9.10. And Meta Financial Bank at $45.60. This is Todd Neuberger of Edward Jones bringing you this Main Street to Wall Street report, Bill.
And when our audience needs more information, whether it's St. Patrick's Day or just one of those other days during the week, how do they reach you?
Locally, 371-0375 or at todd.neuberger@edwardjones.com.
Todd, appreciate all that you do.
Have a great week, everyone. Bye now.
John at Valentino's, 41st and Willow. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Well, you have to be very busy. The seniors are already lining up outside of Valentino's on 41st. What should they do? You know, they can wear the green, but does that help them today with the Great Italian Buffet?
No, but they sure do look funny.
Oh, whoa!
No, we hope to have a good time. And I'll be surprised if we don't see some people in green. And everybody around here really likes to celebrate St. Paddy's Day. But they come in and have a good time and get another 10% off of their lunch or dinner today.
Well, the Rev said in honor of St. Patrick's Day, we need to talk about something green like a salad. You knew that question wouldn't come from me.
No, it had to be from him. You know, one of our number one salads out there is to be our broccoli and bacon salad. It is excellent. It's got a really sweet dressing to it, and it's a favorite of many of our customers, and along with six or seven others that we have out there.
Well, we appreciate, John, all that you do, and we know that people, with it being Senior Monday, will come by. See you, 41st and Willow. You have a good day.
You guys have a great day.
All right, we're in our last 25 seconds or so before we sign off. I'm going to do a little talk at noon about making sure our service clubs don't die. Be talking with the Cosmopolitan Club out at Achieve. Got some others scheduled as, you know, we want to make sure that that next generation, pretty much like the farm, will have those projects they can do in the future. For now, though, our time is up. Thank you for yours.